Good afternoon, Dr. Dan Guerra, Think Biochemistry Podcast. Today is the very first day of April 2024. This is lecture number 9 in our biochemical mosaic on inflammasomes. So, let us begin. There was a study recently conducted that involved the 0,6-methylguanine DNA methyltransferase, known as the MGMT enzyme, that repairs drug-induced DNA damage in acquired drug resistance. It does so by modulating inflammasome activation in a melanoma cell line. Okay, so that's the background. Now, more about the enzyme. Alkylating agents, of course, are very potent carcinogens, and they often result in programmed cell death, as well as a potentiation for mutation and cancer. So this enzyme, MGMT, is indeed a DNA repair enzyme that's involved in the defense against mutagenesis and potential cellular toxicity from those alkylating agents. So the enzyme catalyzes the transfer of the methyl group from an 0,6-alkylguanine and any other potential methylated moieties of the DNA to its own molecule. That is, it's added to the protein. Then it repairs it repairs the toxic lesion. So, interestingly, beyond that, methylation of this MGMT gene promoter, okay, which would typically, what would that do? It would canonically decrease the expression of that transcript, right? So methylation of the MGMT promoter, the DNA level, is associated with several different cancers, including colorectal cancer, lung, lymphoma, and even glioblastoma, megaforma, okay? So, melanoma cells treated with temozolomide, TMZ, over a two-month period, induce the upregulation of the expression of the MGMT enzyme. And those cells became TMZ resistant. And in fact, these TMZ resistant melanoma cells demonstrated increased expression of the NLRP1 and activation subsequently, of course, of the NLRP1 inflammasome. And that led to the maturation and secretion of interleukin-1 beta. So caspase activity was induced, obviously. And that suggests a functional interplay between this methyltransferase enzyme and the inflammasome and the development of acquired drug resistance in multiple cancers. All right. So, while we're talking about methyltransferase enzymes, we should just say that there is known functional cooperation between many DNA methyltransferase mutations and the inflammasome activation. Now, you guys that have been listening to these lectures are well aware of this. But this happens also in the alteration of immune cell fate, and particularly immune cells that are associated with chronic heart failure. Now, monocytes derived from chronic heart failure patients carrying a DNMT3A, that's a methyltransferase 3A mutation, revealed a significant increased expression of classical inflammasomal genes, such as NLRP3 and interleukin-1 beta, compared with the monocytes isolated from just chronic heart failure patients with no diagnosed DNMT3A mutations. So indeed, that DNMT3A silencing in monocytes has also been associated with increasing the secretion of pro-inflammatory cytokines and monocytes of DNMT3A mutation carriers. And this was demonstrated to increase the expression of T-cell stimulating molecules and changes in the signatures of T-cell subsets. Which ones? Th1, 2, 17, as well as CD4 positive memory, CD8 cytotoxic T lymphocytes, and Tregs. Obviously, because you're getting all these alterations and all these different T cell lines, there's an effect, direct effect of this DNMT3A inflammasome association linked to transcription factor expression in T lymphocytes. Okay. So what I'm saying is the results suggest that the monocytes and the T cells with clonal hematopoiesis driver mutations in that DNMT3A methyltransferase likely play a significant and cooperating role in inducing those inflammatory responses linked to chronic heart failure. And they do so by promoting the production of those mutations, the production of highly inflaming transcriptome, which of course will link up with inflammasome activation that will likely then lead to the exacerbation of chronic heart failure in human subjects. Now, ethanol-induced inflammasome activation involves modulating, listen to this, the methylation of DNA encoding fat mass and obesity-associated protein. That's the FTO. And the methyl-6A demethylase, all in an alcohol-induced kidney injury background. So, ethanol administration induces NLRP3 inflammasome activation, the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines, and subsequent renal inflammation in the alcoholic kidneys of the murine model and also in human kidney tubular epithelial HK2 cells. So there's a linkage of an exogenous toxin, that's ethanol, right, having an effect on inflammasome activation directly. Right? So you have the chronic heart failure. Now you're looking at ethanol intoxication. So ethanol actually induces DNA methylation, encoding that FTO and consequently downregulated its expression in the alcoholic kidneys of the mice and in that HK2 cell line, human cell line, right? So inhibition of DNMTs like DNMT1 and 3A and 3B by a specific inhibitor, which is 5-azacitidine, will recover the FTO expression and ethanol-induced kidney injury in the murine model and the HK2 cells. That strongly suggests a correlation that alcohol, that is ethanol, promotes FTO methylation through the DNMTs. So, just to follow through on this discussion, FTO promoted PPAR alpha M6A methylation and PPAR alpha induced NLRP3 inflammasome activation in the alcoholic kidneys of the murine model and the HK2 cells. Now that provides two levels of evidence that ethanol induces inflammasome activation and renal inflammation by directly increasing the transcriptional expression of DNMTs and subsequently inducing an epigenetic modification of the FTO gene and the PPAR alpha in the resident kidney. Okay. So that whole discussion I just went through shows there's a functional association between the DNMTs and the inflammasomes within an alcoholic kidney disease pathophysiology. Okay. So I promised you I would give you more clinical analyses, and that's what we're doing. Now, the link between interferon and inflammasome-mediated damage in various disease states may link multiple infection type sequelae with subsequent disease pathologies. So, CNS resident microglia and astrocytes can produce cytokine type 1 interferons that signal through, of course, the heterodimeric interferon alpha beta receptor. Those are the IFNARs, right? So the binding of a type 1 interferon with the receptor activates classically the JAK-STAT signaling pathway, and that leads to the transcriptional activation of interferon-stimulated genes, ISGs, which mediate both a pro- and an anti-inflammatory function of type 1 interferons. Now, how do you get pro or anti, which is obviously contradictory, not just contrarian? It depends on the cellular environment. So that has to do with reception and downstream sequelae processing of the initial signaling of the ISGs, interferon-stimulated genes, right? So indeed, type 1 interferon response in the CNS can arise from such things as traumatic brain injuries and the more rare viral infections. And neurodegeneration will also activate that same response. So that would, of course, include neurodegenerative diseases, okay? So TBIs, the potential for viral infections, and then classical Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease will all induce this response, this type 1 interferon response. So type 1 interferons actually are protective or deleterious, as in multiple sclerosis, where type 1 interferons are thought to exert and perform an anti-inflammatory response via the production of the anti-inflammatory cytokine IL-10, with the simultaneous suppression of the inflammasome-associated pro-inflammatory cytokine interleukin 1 beta mature form. So that might be why interferon beta is a good first-line therapy for multiple sclerosis, because it limits the infiltration of lymphocytes into the brain, while it decreases the relapse rate in spite of evidence that overexpression of interferon alpha gene, not the beta, in the brains of the murine model directly associates with neuroinflammation and neurodegeneration. So obviously, interferon subtype, titration of that subtype, titration on the receptors, right? And then the cellular residency involved are all critical to this apparent contradiction of those two types of interferon results and sequelae. And you see how this is all linked back to the inflammasome, right? So once again, more clinical discussions. So these type 1 interferonopathies are linked to a constitutive production of type 1 interferons and an increase in the expression of the interferon, the ISGs, the genes that are induced by interferons, right? So type 1 interferonopathies result from, more classically, mutations. For example, there is an Aicardi Gutierrez syndrome, which involves the activation of resident microglia in the CNS and a subsequent chronic neuroinflammation in that rare disease. Other neurodegenerative diseases, the ones we were just talking about, like multiple sclerosis, but also we mentioned Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and in fact, ataxia telangiectasia, are all essentially, truthfully, type 1 interferonopathies. Right? You heard that correctly. AD, PD, MS, and ataxia. Okay. Now, neuroinflammation, therefore, involves, as we know, this whole process because it involves the activation of the inflammasome, which is that cytosolic protein complex platform we've been talking about that has multiple copies of that very specific danger sensing receptor known as AIM2. Plus, it has procaspase 1 and the adaptor protein, the ASC. Remember, this is all our review. And that ASC, apoptotic spec-containing protein, just in case you forgot. So, the activation of the inflammasome in the glial and neuronal cells results in caspase 1 activation, pyrototic cell death in the CNS, and, of course, the associated release of pro-inflammatory cytokines like interleukin 1 beta mature form and interleukin 18 mature form, both because of caspase-mediated conversion, okay, to the active pro-inflammatory interleukins there. Now, remember that apoptosis, programmed cell death, sensus stricto, requires a particular cysteine-dependent aspartate-specific protease. Remember, those were the caspases, right? And they produce this orchestrated disassembly of the cell. They cleave cellular substrates, resulting in cytoplasmic and nuclear condensation, DNA cleavage, very specific DNA cleavage within the nucleus, and the maintenance of, at the same time, an intact plasma lemma. So you get degradation products of apoptotic cells that are then packaged into membrane-enclosed bodies that are then targeted for phagocytosis and removal in vivo. That results in absence of inflammation. Now, uniquely, caspase 1 dependent program cell death, and here we can just bring up pyrotosis, is stimulated by a range of microbial infections. We've already talked about Staphylococcus, but we can also bring in Salmonella, Francisella, and Legionella. These are all bacterial diseases, right? And non-infectious stimuli, including host factors produced during a myocardial infarction, wherein caspase 1 processes, once again, the inactive precursors of IL-1 beta and IL-18 into the mature inflammatory cytokines, pro-inflammatory cytokines. Then you get rapid cell death, characterized by plasma membrane rupture, because this is pyrotosis environment now, and the release of pro-inflammatory intracellular contents. Right? Okay. So that now those are all bacterial infection associated caspase mediated inflammatory responses. Okay. So apoptosis inhibitor of macrophage, that's what AIMs are, AIMs, is indeed by its own accounting within the cell, a secreted polypeptide. And of course it acts as a key mediator of not just this whole inflammasome process, but it regulates lipid synthesis, mainly expressed by macrophages in lymphoid and inflamed tissues. And it regulates mechanisms also involved, as you know, inflammatory responses. And this can occur with infection and atherosclerosis, right? So AIM, the protein, besides being involved in inflammation in the inflammasome as a component on the platform of all the polypeptides. Remember that? AIM actually decreases lipid droplet size in adipocytes. So following incorporation to mature adipocytes via, of course, a CD36-mediated cytosis will associate with a cytosolic FASN inhibiting fatty acid synthase activity, leading to lipolysis, the degradation of storage triacylglycerol into, of course, the products, glycerol and free fatty acids. So this AIM protein is actually a CD5L gene product. That's the human gene. It induces lipolysis, occurring with progression of obesity. In fact, AIM participates in obesity-associated inflammation following recruitment of pro-inflammatory macrophages, that's type 1, into the adipose. While that occurs, it also correlates with insulin resistance and obesity-related metabolic disease, where the regulation of the intracellular lipids mediated by CD5L, otherwise known as AIM, has a direct effect on transcriptional regulation mediated by nuclear receptors like the ROR gamma C, right? That's a retinoic acid associated receptor, of course. Now, AIM functions as a regulator of metabolic switch in T helper Th17 cells, where AIM regulates the expression of pro-inflammatory genes in Th17. That's going to, of course, be interleukin-17A. But it does so via altering lipid content in Th17 cells. And that alteration of lipid content is involved in limiting the synthesis of the cholesterol, remember, ligand, limiting ROR gamma C activity and expression of pro-inflammatory genes. So AIM also participates in obesity-associated autoimmunity via its association with IgM, that's the membrane-associated immunoglobulin, interfering with the binding of IgM to Fc alpha mu receptors, thus enhancing the development of long-lived plasma cells that will produce high-affinity IgG autoantibody. One more thing to say about AIM. It acts as an inhibitor of apoptosis in macrophages, promotes macrophage survival because of that, and that's from the effect of oxidized lipids, because oxidized lipids will induce apoptosis, right? And this occurs in atherosclerosis. And further, it's involved in the early response, AIM that is, to microbial infection against all kinds of possible bacterial pathogens that we have already now discussed. So that means it's acting as a pattern recognition receptor, ultimately regulating autophagy, in fact, promoting it. Okay. So you thought that AIM was just another protein we were going to discuss. Now I gave you a lot more detail. You see, that's why you listen to Authentic Biochemistry, hopefully. All right. And not just because occasionally the music that I put in the show notes, right? But I know that you like that too. At least some of you do. I think a lot of you do. Hope so. All right, one more thing. An autoimmune—it's in Redox Biology, published in 2020. Don't worry, all these papers will be in the show notes. An autoimmune disease. What is that? It's where autoimmunity causes the disease directly, or plays some kind of role in the subsequent pathogenic sequelae. Typically, autoimmune diseases involve, not always, but typically, the presence of autoantibodies and or autoreactive T lymphocytes, which will then, of course, break down self-tolerance. So the presence of autoantibodies in the sera of patients continues to be the major biochemical hallmark for identifying and diagnosing autoimmune disease. However, there are other factors like systemic or tissue-specific dysfunction or metabolic dysfunction, and there is histological evidence directly of inflammatory biomarkers. So, human leukocyte antigen. We talked about this probably about a year ago. We were talking about HLAs. Maybe not that long ago. Human leukocyte antigen, HLA testing, where HLA is, again, the human designation for the major histocompatibility complex, MHC proteins, which, of course, do what? They present antigens on the surface of cells, right? And there are assays to test for the presence of autoreactive T cells. And those are actually used to diagnose autoimmune disease. So these genes and the variation of the T cell receptor beta domains are shown to vary according to sex-biased autoimmune diseases. That's right. Furthermore, complement genes embedded in the MHC locus also vary according to male versus female sex in their sequence and complementarity involvement in human autoimmunity diseases. Now, we could talk about more about that later, but probably not today. Now, the autoimmune diseases type 1, diabetes, and myocarditis is also an autoimmune disease, I will tell you. They're exceptions, and that they are far more common in men, right? And we've heard this in recent popular press, I think, right? Although I don't pay much attention to that. I am so informed. Sex differences in the immune response are responsible for many of the characteristic features of autoimmune diseases. Like what? Like elevated circulating autoantibodies and immune complex deposition resulting in tissue damage and organ-specific autoinflammation, as in beta cell destruction in type 1 diabetes, which is dominated in males. Okay. So immune-mediated reactive oxygen species production is generated following, for example, viral bacterial infections, as well as from, of course, you know, tissue damage. Infections and chemicals have long been postulated to play a role in the pathogenesis and or exacerbation of all of these autoimmune diseases. So immune signaling pathways that are associated with reactive oxygen species generation include, now these should sound very familiar to you now because of inflammasome lectures in this mosaic, include tumor necrosis factor and the NLRP3, you know, that is the NLR pyrin domain containing 3 caspase 1 inflammasome. So TNF, tumor necrosis factor, induces pyritosis, which of course you know is a specific, highly inflammatory form of programmed cell death. And of course you also know it is characterized by caspase 1 dependent formation of plasma membrane pores, remember that, leading to the release of the pro-inflammatory cytokines, interleukin 1 beta and 18. And then, of course, then you get massive ROS generation and cell lysis. And remember, of course, once again, the protoforms of interleukin 1 beta and 18 are induced by toll-like receptor 4, which is activated by enzymatic cleavage from caspase. So sex hormones, estrogen in particular, are known to be directly involved in reactive oxygen species production in the mitochondria. So there's another sex-linked association, autoimmune disease involving inflammasomes. All right. Okay, we're going to stop there. I really thought we were going to get into the metaphysical, but we missed it. So I'm going to have to stop here. We're going to have to get to it later. Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, April 2024. Wishing you as pleasant as possible on Monday afternoon. Bye for now.